service. Father, I thank you this morning that we have this wonderful privilege of coming to your house and spending a little time with you and telling you how grateful we are of how you bless us. I pray on this Father's Day that you take this message that's particularly devoted to fathers, but applicable to all of our hearts, and that you would allow us, God, to be able to glean truth from it that would help us to become a better person and a better father or mother and in the likeness of Jesus. So use your word this morning, we pray, in your name. Amen. A while back, Reader's Digest, and I've had them for many years, had an article entitled, What Makes a Great Dad? And they decided to ask several children to get their answers about what makes a great dad. And so they had these various questions, and the first question was, what's the coolest thing about your dad? Dylan, a little boy aged 9, said, if you ask him something over and over again, he'll just give up and tell you, I always know what I'm getting for Christmas 3 months in advance. Sounds like a good father, doesn't it? Ryan, who was 10, said, my dad always gets better stuff than my mom when he shops, like chips, chocolate bars, donuts, and lots of pop. My mom gets vegetables and stuff. Second question was, what's the best thing that dads get to do? May, who was 6, said, stay up late. She thinks that's really great. Jennifer, 11, said, work in their pajamas. Any dads work in their pajamas? Hopefully not out in the yard, but anyway. Stephanie, who was 7, said, beat you in a tickle fight. And Jenny, who was 7, said, they get to love you. I like that answer. And what's the hardest thing dads do? And Sarah, who was 6, said, go to work. My dad designs buildings and stuff. He designed Newfoundland. Scott, who was 11, said, one of the hardest things about being a dad is their kids' friends. For instance, one of them can twirl a baton, and the dad could end up with a big bump and a bald spot. Believe me, I've seen it happen. And David, 11, said, he has to pay taxes. That's a hard thing to do, isn't it? And Yasmina, who was 11, said, find time. Oh boy, that's a tough one. Another question, what's the most important thing fathers do? Burl, who was 10, said, keep a promise. Ooh. That cuts. And Caleb, who was 11, said, and is an entrepreneur, said, the most important things fathers do is give us money. I think that's a good one. Justin said, let children make their own decisions, and when they grow up, let them move away. Oh, hallelujah to that. I second that motion. And Justin said, they get to be an example to you. Without a dad, you wouldn't really have a personality. Not sure what he means by that, but anyway, take that, moms, I guess. And if you could change one thing about your dad, what would it be? Tina, who was 10, said, I'd want him to come home from work earlier. And Kareth said, when we go on trips, I'd make him stop so we can eat. He likes to get there fast. Oh, he's one of those. And there was one more question. How can you tell if you have a good dad? And Julian, who was 11, said, sometimes you can't tell until you grow up. Jules, 12, commented, when you ask them a question, they don't say, bug off, kid. Some people do. And Pedram said, when he's away, you miss him. Being a father is one of the most important roles in the entire world. Everybody agree? It's curious, though, but there was a study done on fathers, and the average father in North America, so said the study, spends less than 0.5 minutes in quality time with his children each day, under 3 hours per year. In meaningful conversation, Gary Collins said, they fail. It's my contention that children need the love and example, both a mother and a father, wherever possible. And with God's grace, I know single parents can offer a great deal of love and raise their children to know what love is all about and face and feel security. But there's also something missing in the lives of children when one parent is absent or unavailable to them. Biologically, a man and a woman play a significant essential role in the production of a child. Without both, you wouldn't have a child. You can't do without either one. And in the same way, God's design and intent is that spiritually, socially, intellectually, and emotionally, both a father and a mother play significant essential roles in the raising of a child. In the first 12 to 14 years of your child's life, your child looks to you, Dad, for your love, your appreciation, your acceptance, your approval, and even your time. After that, it might be you looking for their attention as they move on to closer friendships with their peers. And they decide in life that their peers are more important than their parents and their part-time jobs and their educational pursuits. So up to that time of 12 to 14, we have such an opportunity to invest in the lives of our kids. And Dad, I know you face work-related pressures to work longer hours, particularly in this present day. And I'm aware it's a very expensive time and age that we live in. I know that. And to earn enough money and pay the bills takes ever-increasing amounts of your time and energy, no question. I realize that, Dad, you play many roles. Mr. Fix-It, the banker, Prince Charming, sports captain. Yet your role as a father is most vital and ultimately can be the most fulfilling role that you'll ever play in your entire life. As fathers, there are several goals that we need to set for our lives to assist us in becoming the fathers that God intended us to be. Not what we intended, but what He intended us to be. And I want to give you just a few of those goals this morning. First of all, make every day count. Say that with me. Make every day count. Ephesians 5:16 in the New Living Translation says, make the most of every opportunity. You know, most of us like to believe we have 18 years to build a relationship with our children, don't we? We think we've got that long, they'll be in the house, and after that they're gone to college or whatever. That's 6,570 days. Seems like a lot. Not many of us go to the wall and mark off each day, and we don't do that. But every single day is a day of opportunity. We can use those days to share the values that are important to us. We can use them to go mini golf together. We can use them to spend time talking about what's happening in their lives. And believe me, there's a lot going on in the lives of your children that you'll never know about unless you spend time discovering it. And I don't think the role of a mother or a father really ever ends. I find them constantly in conversations with my daughters, even up to today. And they're getting up there. I won't tell their ages, or if they ever happen to visit here, they'd shoot me. But I know that my role is still very important and vital, and they call me at times so that I can invest my understanding of life and my, if I could say, my experience into some of the things they walk through. In business, most men do their best to make every single day count. They have to close an important business deal. They have to finish a project. They have to meet a quota. And all are important goals for every single day that you go to work. And these goals are repeated over and over and over again. Yet for some reason in the lives of our children, many of us think there's always tomorrow. When our children are small, sometimes we feel as if we have nothing in common with them. It's hard when you're holding a baby and all he's doing is making a wet spot on your lap, right? It's hard when you have a youngster who wants to be out doing things that you don't really enjoy doing as a father, and they do it with their friends. And so we just wait until they grow up a little. But during those early years, our kids want and they need our attention. It's not that we'll always be engaged in activities with them, because that won't happen, but that we'll talk to them and show them just how important they are to us. And they're so open to us. When our kids reach their teen years, you know, sometimes they don't want to be seen in public with us dads. Hello? Isn't that the way it is? It's like, you're too old. While they're young, they want to talk to us about anything and everything. And when they get to be teens, the best we might get out of them some days when we ask a question is a grunt. That's what they'll answer us with. When your kids are young, you can tuck them in at 8 and say goodnight. But for some teens who go through significant rebellion and confusion in their lives, you might wait up until the wee hours of the morning before they wander in. Dad, you might think their bedroom is a mess with toys, oh yes, and with clothes thrown all over the floor now, while they're small. But when they become teens, you might want a tetanus shot before you venture into the forbidden territory. Right? Do you know what I'm talking about? I'm not a perfect father by any means, but I believe that because I spent time with my daughters when they were small and significant times, it was important to me. And I couldn't stand behind a pulpit ever as a pastor and talk about that if I wasn't doing it. And so I did it consistently, and my wife made sure I did it. She would always remind me. And I listened to them, and they listened to me, and we took dates going to McDonald's and various places. One didn't want to go to McDonald's. Oh, no, it had to be Starbucks. I always spent twice as much on her as I did on the other one because she always wanted Starbucks. But that's where we went, and we had dates, and we had times of talking, and it was very important to me. And so today, we still have a relationship that's strong. I can't play like Colby does, but I play against the guitar at times, if you know what I'm talking about. But when the kids were young, we used to sing, and I'd make up songs. Now, I'm not singing them today, just so you know, but I'd make up these silly songs, and we'd sing these silly songs. My daughter, who lives in Kelowna, Melanie, just loved the story of the lost sheep. And when I would sing, "My Mama Told Me," or "I Know an Old Woman Who Swallowed a Fly," or when I talk in a strange voice with strange characters that I'd make up, we'd laugh and giggle and enjoy our time together. Time together. I made every moment count that I could. Even when there wasn't much money available, we found a way to take a vacation together. And I want you to know, when there are four of you in a tent, you do some pretty serious bonding. You really do. Supper was always sacred in our home. Always. We knew that we didn't often eat breakfast or lunch together, but we did our best at the end of the day to have supper together around the table and talk over our meal. And sometimes the conversations weren't easy. Sometimes we had to search for the questions, but we made sure that it was what we did. And as a dad, I've made an effort to go to many school functions, even when they weren't my thing, because it was important to my kids. Today is important in the life of your child. Whether young, whether they're older, it's important. Put them in your schedule. Make sure you do it. Lead them in family devotions as often as is possible. Find a time that works. Bring them to church. Let them see you serving in the church and pray for them in your own devotional time. Every single day. Make every day count. But there's another goal. Weed out your schedule. Weed out your schedule. Colossians 4:5 in the Phillips translation says, make the best possible use of your time. Life's busy, isn't it? Anybody find life busy? Very busy, always go, go, go. We move at a fast pace today, and it seems like there's no such thing sometimes as downtime. We go from dawn till dusk. We fight traffic. We run. We add more things to our stressed-out schedules than we should try to accomplish. Yet there are some myths that fill our thinking that make us live the way we do. The first myth is this. I personally have no control over my busy life. Let's face it. Some of us just have a personality that doesn't let us slow down. Anybody here that's an A-type personality? Anybody? You know, you're an A-type. I see a few little hands going up there, and some don't want to, but we're A-type. We're impatient, work-obsessed, competitive, achievement-oriented, aggressive, stressed. We drive in the passing lane. Oh, yeah, I do that too. We fume whenever we have to wait in line. I might be getting closer to the truth in your life. We frown at people who seem to have too much time in their hands. And we groan at disorganization. Does that sound like you? Notice that Paul said, make the best possible use of your time. It's your time. If you give permission to others to fill your schedule so tight that you're always busy and so overwhelmed, then you only have yourself to blame. Hello? True. Some employers will pile on the work as long as you'll take it. And sometimes you have to take it, but often we choose to put extra hours so that the next day won't be as busy. But you can bet on it that as soon as you have less work, someone in authority will find a way to give you more. It always works that way. I remember my first full-time job, I worked for Border Brokers. They were a subsidiary of Greyhound Corporation. It was in downtown Montreal in the old part of the city, cobblestone streets and all of that. I started early in the morning because I had to travel to downtown Montreal from the suburbs by train, going with my mother, who was in management with Bell Canada. I normally brought my lunch and ate it at my desk while I worked. And as a bonded courier, I often worked my job and another guy's because he was always late, always sick, always had another appointment. So I was often finding I was doing two jobs. It meant running late, working through lunch hours, working through breaks. If I had spoken to Dave Dumichel, my employer, and if I had simply refused to do the extra things when I was entitled to time off, nothing would have happened. I was the most dependable employee around, they told me. But I chose to do it, to make an impression. And then at times, my mother had to listen to me grumble all the way home. Not only our work life robs us of time, but we allow interruptions to rob us of valuable and quality time with our families. Have you noticed the supper time law? Have you noticed it? As soon as you sit down, the phone rings. Does that happen in your house? It does with me so many times, and most of the calls are not really for me. There's somebody trying to get me to buy something or scam me. Here's the secret. If you're sitting down at supper time and the phone rings, let it ring! It's not going to kill the person on the other end. It's not going to do it. Turn off the ringer. If someone is rude enough to pull you away from your family time over supper, then be rude enough to ignore their call. You make the choice. It's your time. What's more important anyway? Your family? Business associate? Telemarketer? What's more important? You make the choice. A second myth is, I'm always busy. Anybody ever say that? I'm always busy. Have you ever thought about the time wasters that may work alongside you? The can you spare a minute people? They never take a minute. They always say half an hour. Hello? Way it is. The I'll just get a cuppa and it turns into a 15-minute office gossip session. Or the might be an important email in here syndrome. And if you don't learn how to use the delete button, you'll never overcome this one. Or I'll look at that later email. So you print it, then pick it up and put it down 50 times before you actually read it and handle it. And if you've dealt with it at first, you wouldn't have to deal with it again. So many things that make us busy that wouldn't otherwise. Even at home, we have time wasters that rob us of time with our kids. We're becoming as bad as our kids in some way. We stare at the cell phone. Ooh, you're starting to meddle, preacher. But we stare at the cell phone. And we get caught up with something on our computer before we spend time with our kids. Or we watch another hour of TV, just gotta relax, you know, instead of spending time with our kids. We over-garden, over-tinker with our cars, overdo a hobby, making priorities of things that ultimately are really only secondary. Every single one of us gets 7 days per week. Every one of us gets 168 hours per week. Every one of us gets 10,080 minutes per week. It's up to you, Dad, and every one of us to make sure that time isn't wasted, but that it's well used. You don't have to be busy all the time. And there's a third myth. Someday I'll have more time. That's a good one. The truth of the matter is there'll never be a day with less to do. Every day will present new challenges, new time wasters. There will always be one more meeting, one more purchase, one more wedding or funeral, one more phone call to make, always. It's up to you and I to decide what we'll allow to infringe on our time. If you're going to spend time with your children, you need to do it now, because you won't get it later. Send them an email or a text asking about their day. Plan a lunch date or a coffee with them. Go bowling with them or take a hike if they're old enough. I've done all of these things. I've pulled away. I've gone mini golfing, bowling, hiking, biking. Sometimes the board wanted a special meeting and I said, no, I've got a date with my child. And they had to wait. Because there are things that are more important, biblically speaking, and we need to make those choices. Someday I'll have more time doesn't come. And Dad, only you can make the decision to weed out your schedule and in so doing, deal with the miss. And if you're somebody who makes promises all the time to your kids about spending time with them, but don't fulfill the promises, you need to change that now so they'll know that you're a man of your word. There's a third goal that we need to have. Love them unconditionally. I like what 1 Corinthians 13:5 says. It says, love does not demand its own way. Anybody was really good in gymnastics in school? Oh, one or two of you. Maybe most of you were like me. I could play basketball and volleyball and most of the sports in gym, because we always had gym. But when they were picking teams in those things, I'd normally be in the middle of the pack. But I despised gymnastics. I really did. I was petrified of the springboard in the box. You know what I'm talking about? You had to go off the springboard and vault over the box. I was petrified because one day when I was about to go, the guy ahead of me went springing off the springboard went back, and he went headfirst into the box. And they had to get an ambulance to take him out of there. I didn't like the springboard in the box. Good reason why. I was petrified of it. And I didn't like getting into the rings and hanging by my legs. Because once I got up there, I couldn't get out of it. Always needed help. I looked like an idiot hanging by those rings. It was really ridiculous. Everyone knew I hated gymnastics, and when teams were chosen, I was aware that it was possible I'd be one of the last picks picked for any of those events. I knew why I wouldn't be picked, because the captains wanted winners on their team. They wanted people who could score points and could deliver a victory. And in gymnastics, that just wasn't me. Most of our world today is driven by the same mentality, picking people who are winners. Everything from sports teams to sales teams to business teams look for that special winning quality in a person. That's what they're looking for. That's what they're hoping for. Success and achievement are some of the highest priorities in life today, wherever you go. May I say, Father and Mother, that this isn't true about raising your children. If you show special favor when they bring home a great report card or a sports trophy, but otherwise put them down and tell them that they could be better or do better, then you're not loving them unconditionally. I know we need to encourage our children to thrive and do their best, but our children, regardless of their age, need to know that we'll love them anyway, regardless of their achievements or lack of them. We have to always be in their court. And our commitment to our children, dads, needs to be based on a relationship with them, not their success, not their failure. Certainly, we need to try to motivate them to do better tomorrow than they did today. That changing for the better is always the goal for all of us. But we shouldn't hoist guilt trips and achievement levels on them that they simply can't achieve. You know, and another thing that we shouldn't do is try to get them to do what their brother or sister does. Hello? True. I had one daughter. She excelled in school. She was very intentional about all the things she did. She'd go to school, high school, and with nothing less, with always with a scripture verse sweater on. That's who she was. My other daughter was a socialite. Making the top grades in school wasn't her greatest responsibility. Getting to know the most people was her highest goal in life. You know, we'd move on to a new block. Before the truck was unloaded, my daughter knew everybody on the street. I still don't know them all. That's who she was. They had different personalities and different characters, and we couldn't make one be the same as the other. If your child is to be successful as a person, they need to be secure in your love, that regardless of what they do, that you will love them for who they are. Show them that you love them by praising them. Every single day, find something to boast about. I know there are things that wear on us, having to nag them about their homework, their bedroom, the amount of time they spend on the phone or the computer, but we need to make sure that we also build them up to know that we love them and are aware of their accomplishments too. And the truth is, it's simple. When we want someone to do something, they'll normally respond better to praise than they will to criticism. Aren't you like that? It's just the way it is. None of us like to be criticized, but praise us and we'll shoot for the moon. And thinking of their room, what can you praise them about? Well, ceiling is sure tidy. Look for things to praise them about and love them unconditionally. I have one more goal. And I think this is one that should be practiced every single day. Laugh a lot with your family. In Proverbs 17:22, in the New Living Translation, it says, a cheerful heart is good medicine. Most of us take life too seriously. And I know life can be serious. We fret when our health turns bad. There's never enough money in the bank. We can't seem to get everything that we need to do done. But the way to make your home life better and take the pressure off is to bring on the laughter. You might think I'm wacko, but in the privacy of my home or car, I've often talked in strange new voices. I do that. I'll go off in a strange voice and it gets everybody laughing. I've created languages, not when I'm alone, but with my family and the occasional friend. RJ's here and he knows what I'm talking about. If we're into a very serious conversation, I'll throw in a strange voice and all of a sudden the two of us are roaring. I mimicked people on the radio at times. When my girls were teens, I'd see someone dressed in the absolute most absurd clothes, and I'd tell them, I think I've spotted Melanie's new husband or Andrea's new boyfriend. I think it's important to laugh a lot with your family. We had one pet in our home, Tigger, a cat. And I had always said to my wife, I don't want cats, I don't want dogs, nothing. But she comes home one day with this cat that she's only going to bring in the house for 2 weeks to look after while a friend moves. Ah, that cat was with us for so many years, it was unbelievable. But I learned how to have fun with a cat. I don't think the cat had fun, but I had fun. When my wife Ruth inherited a huge bag of old beads, I think it was a ton's worth, from her stepmother, I decided to use them to my advantage. And I would put the cat up on a table, and I'd wrap the beads around the cat's neck. I'd put doll's clothes on the cat. We'd laugh ourselves silly as the cat would just stare at us. You know, just once that cat bit me. Just once, I bit him back. He bit me, I bit him back. He never bit me again. Good medicine. I didn't bite hard, but he knew, don't bite me. It was a matter of laughing with my family. Life can be too serious. And so here's this cat with all these beads and doll's clothes, and I'm dancing and singing with him. And it was a riot for everybody that was watching, but not for the cat. I can guarantee that one day my kids will remember me more for those times than any other time. Dad, sometimes we can resemble Scrooge or Jean Valjean from the Les Miserables all too often. That's who we resemble. Some of us may have forgotten what it is to truly laugh heartily with our family, to do silly things. And let's face it, you will have times when you're going to cry with your family, in times of loss, defeat, illness. So make sure that you balance it out by planning times of joy and laughter. Being a father's a difficult, demanding role, no question. But it can be delightful. Four goals that make you to be a best dad possible are: make every day count, every day spend quality time with your family, plan it, weed out your schedule, get rid of those time wasters that can avoid making your kids a priority. Love them unconditionally, encourage them to be successful, but demonstrate your love when they're successful and when they fail as well. And laugh a lot with your family. Let your hair hang down. Stop taking life so seriously. I am going to ask that we stand and that Dad...